Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer Distributors. For more information, visit unionbeerdist.com.
My name is Hannah Forden. I'm the membership coordinator at Heritage Radio Network, but even before I joined the team, I loved listening to HRN during my subway commute. It made the time go quickly and left me feeling inspired for the day ahead. HRN listeners tune in from all over the world. But there are a few traits that we all have in common, no matter where we listen from. A curious palate, the fierceness to make a difference, and a hunger for lifelong learning about the culinary world. As you know, Heritage Radio Network is a listener-supported nonprofit. To deliver the most ambitious, entertaining, and of-the-moment stories in 2018, we need your help. We need to raise $150,000 by December 31st to accomplish these goals and to keep your favorite shows on the air. Together, we can make this HRN's most exciting, impactful, and delicious year yet. Become a member by donating today. Join us at heritageradionetwork.org/donate, and you'll immediately start enjoying benefits such as VIP invitations to HRN events, where you will mix and mingle with your favorite hosts. Memberships also make a perfect holiday gift for all the foodies in your life. This year, why not give the gift of food radio? You'll hear your generosity in action for the year to come. Help keep our lights on and our mics hot by pledging your support today at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Thanks for listening.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 in the Good Beer Seal. Today is Tuesday, November 28th, 2017. We've got a special show tonight. We were talking about the New York City Brewers Guild and how it's evolved and kind of the state of New York City brewing. We've got some great guests, thanks to our sponsors, Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. All right, so let's go around the room. We got some good buddies. One of the deans of beer in New York City, Mr. Kyle himself.
How you doing, Jimmy? Kyle Hurst, Big Alice Brewing Company. And since we're talking about the guild tonight, I'm also vice president of the New York City Brewers Guild.
It's great to have you on, man. We've done some at least five or six shows together.
It's been a few. Yeah, it's always good to be back, though. Thank you.
And he's sitting in the dean's seat today. And let's go around with all our brewery guests.
Hey, my name is Gabe Berry. I'm the Beer Education and Community Ambassador for Brooklyn Brewery. Also showcasing my New York City Brewers Guild hat, I am now serving as the Marketing Communications Chair for the Guild. But back in the day when the Guild first started, I used to stand behind your bar, Jimmy, and support Guild events from those days. So I've been on all sides.
I'm always very proud of the work that you do, Gabe.
I learned it from you, Jimmy.
Oh, buddy.
Hey, Katie Lynch here, also from Brooklyn Brewery. I get to work in marketing at the brewery, which I love, with Miss Gabe, and I'm also on the board of the New York City Brewers Guild.
That's great, and I think that I've met you at every beer event in New York for the last 5 years, right?
I guess I get around then.
Yeah.
How's it going? I'm Basil Lee from Finback Brewery, and I'm also on the, well, I guess I'm the president of the New York City Brewers Guild.
You are the president, Basil.
Don't guess. You are.
Well, this is a special group. You know, the New York City brewing has come so far. Just 10 years ago, there were four breweries in New York City. And, you know, how many are there now?
I think we're over 30, 32,
33. Well, it's more than 30 because there are 30 active or soon to be active tasting rooms in the New York City area right now. So it's big. It's getting there. Much more than 10 back in the day.
Yeah. And I just love you guys. And when did the Brewers Guild start?
So the Brewers Guild, good old Josh Schaefner sold Beer Week just after 2011. Beer Week took a year off to kind of regroup, and the Guild was formed during those years. And so we, I guess it would have been February 2013 would have been that year where we started bringing back Gear Week and or Beer Week and getting a little bit more excited.
Well, let's cheers to you guys. So one reason I wanted to have the show is that there are so many brewers now, and I've heard a lot of the anecdotes and stories about the Brewers Guild. Brett from Keg and Lantern, we're hanging out last month at Strong Rope, and he said, you know, there's a lot of cool things happening at the Brewers Guild meeting. So that's really where we want to go with this, is now you guys are a group representing New York City Brewing. And, you know, tell us what it's like. So, I mean, Basil, as president, you know, you let's tell us your role and how you see the guild and the community that it's forming and how that matters to, you know, brewing.
Yeah, I think the guild's changed a lot. I think part of it is that the industry's changed a lot. I think we've kind of reached a critical mass and some momentum in terms of having more members, more breweries in the city, a wider range of breweries in the city. I think that the beer market is kind of really maturing, and the brewing market or the brewing scene's really maturing. And so I think the guild makes a lot of sense. You know, our mission has always been to educate in craft beer and to kind of promote craft beer. Definitely a focus in organizing New York City Craft Beer Week. But I think now, as we have more members, you know, our goals are expanding, and we're really trying to create a community of brewers and kind of addressing both the needs of consumers in terms of preaching the stories about craft beer, as well as the brewing industry in terms of sharing resources and working together to make the industry better.
Yeah, I think to expand on what Basil's saying too is there's been a fundamental shift. You know, like Gabe said, it was 5 or 6 years ago when this, and I think there were some, you know, early you know, earlier versions of the guild that weren't maybe quite as organized.
You can tell your
formal
story, Kyle.
well, I've got a whole bunch of them, but I guess the point I was making is, you know, 5 years ago, you know, Big Alice was founded in 2011. We didn't brew our first beer until 2013, but at that time, like, we were fighting in New York City, you know, for bars to carry craft. You know, we could name, you know, all the you know, bars in the city on one hand, you know, Jimmy's, of course, being one of them, that carried craft beer, or prominently carried craft beer anyway. And now we're fighting to carry local. You know, so there's, like we said, 30-something of us locally, over 300 in the state. You know, so New York City, New York State, you know, we've got a lot of, you know, kind of really uber local stuff where, you know, that's kind of the fight now. And the shift from those four breweries or, you know, whatever it was, you know, just a few years ago, to the 30 of us, where we're really
so
trying to get.
How does it work? I mean, you're getting. You know, let's talk about the retail market. You're getting handles and tap rooms and bars. You guys are coming together as a guild and having meetings and trying to work together. Then at the same time, you're competing for lines and bars. You know, how do you guys handle that?
I think to speak on behalf of one of the, as Katie and I would call ourselves, bigger kids in the sandbox, at so in terms of some of the breweries that participate in guild stuff, I think that a lot of we try to really put away our sales hats when we're all in those rooms. And I think that you know, just echoing a lot of what has been said so far, if you look at the economy collapsing in 2008, propelling this entire kind of leap and bound and snowball of not only in New York City, not only in New York State, but domestically, the beer market as a whole has drastically changed. And very quickly, we've gone back to this kind of not only regional as like cool and exclusive, but we've gone back to the old school, like pre-prohibition, pre-industrial revolution idea of what and going back to the beer, the brewery as a sense of community. And I think that in terms of a lot of what we do at New York City Brewers Guild meetings, a lot of what we do as a group of people is try to remind ourselves that we're ultimately all doing very similar things, and that we all together make each other stronger. In order to make an egg sandwich, you got to break some eggs. And we are breaking all the eggs and continuing
somebody
to make the
to,
industry stronger.
Has to raise the chickens. So.
Well, you know, that's what we got the farmers for. Jason from Strong Rope is taking care of that, I think. But
we,
I'm kidding.
We often describe it as, you know, because, you know, Long Island City, of course, is, you know, one of the hubs within the city where we've got six breweries, five tap rooms in our neighborhood alone. And I often describe it as we're competing with each other, not against each other. And that's, you know, probably, you know, the best way is kind of phrase how we all work together. And then,
so number one, you guys, you'd like to see more of local breweries represented in bars and tap rooms.
Well, I think, I mean, the competition issue, I think actually, which is interesting, you know, that I think that's a great statement, Kyle, which is to say that I think competition actually makes us all better. I think it pushes everyone. I think the New York City brewing scene really kind of developed pretty quickly and became mature really quickly. I mean, and we're talking about a few years, 3 to 4 years, where I think it's caught up with a lot of other brewing scenes. And I think some of that friendly competition kind of pushes all us to strive to make the best beer we can possibly make, to make the most creative beers we can possibly make. And I think the other thing is kind of, you know, that one of the missions of the Guild is to kind of build New York City as a kind of marquee place for beer. You know, I think New York City has, you're always competing with a lot of different interests, you know, wine, cocktail, other things to do. And it hasn't been as much of a beer town as other places, but I think all the kind of elements are in place. And I think part of the mission of the Guild is to work together, you know, to do that, you know, with Beer Week, with the events that we put on as a community, where I think that people will travel to New York to do collaborations, will want to come here to drink our beer. So I think that's kind of one of the missions that we're working on together as well.
So let's talk about what we're drinking. So we're drinking a Finback, and it's really good. The nose was like floral, fruity.
So we always like to kind of make fun beers. We like to kind of tackle our what we brew creatively. This is a coconut and coffee IPA, so kind of bringing a little bit kind of what seems like might be things that don't work well together in terms of flavors, but end up, I think, working well. So a little bit, you know, obviously coffee and tropical notes from the hops and the coconut kind of creates a kind of fun, funky little beer.
It's pretty good, right? What do you think, Kyle, Gabe?
I think it's great.
I love it. You know, and I'm not a coconut guy, so there's, you know, like coconut and blueberry are two things that I just, you know, and celery, which nobody really does beer with celery. But coconut and blueberry are kind of two things that I really just stay away from personally. If we had another show, I'd tell you all the stories. But
we had a beer from Brazil that had celery in it.
Really? Yeah. I would try it, but
cashews. Sorry.
But I guess getting back to the beer, I think it's excellent. I think it does, you know, kind of, you know, bring all of those things kind of together in a way that you wouldn't expect to work, yet it does.
Cheers, man. This is a moment of silence. It is a good beer. And that's one thing that I'm really proud of you guys, you know, going back to some of the roots of your brewery. Remember when you guys opened, I think you let me come out and I had my barbecue rig with you guys.
Yeah.
But you've come a long way. Now you have cans and you're really recognized as one of the top breweries in the city, in the region.
It's been a great 3 years. I think we've grown with the kind of city, and we've grown with the industry here. So we're in a 13,000 square foot space in Queens, and it started out really empty, and we're slowly filling it up. We got a couple new tanks a few months ago, got a canning line, and so just really just trying to grow along with the city and all of our other breweries here.
But you're a good example of, like, you know, when you guys started, you're out in Glendale, Queens.
It's really far, Basil. It's not that bad.
But you were like, it was like Gun Hill was up, you know, you're like half a mile from the subway or more. Gun Hill did the same, you know, single cut in Astoria. You guys opened kind of around the same time, and you found that as your, you know,
yeah, I mean, I think,
your vibe.
I think, you know, we're pretty much Glendale, which is like the western, I think, western side of Ridgewood. It used to be part of Ridgewood. So it's all kind of just, you know, not that far, but it is out there. But people are kind of moving closer and closer out there. We've got a couple of breweries near us. Bridge and Tunnel is there. And so I think the city is kind of moving that direction. And we kind of made a decision to have space. You know, obviously budget was an issue, and then getting a large space. And so we've, you know, we benefit from that, but definitely it's a trek. You have to make an effort. And I think, hopefully people, enjoy themselves when they come out and make a day of it.
All right, man. Hey, this coconut coffee IPA is doing wonders to my palate. I'm liking it. So I need more, but we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
In 1996, Sheehan Family Companies, formerly L. Knife & Son, acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn. Union Beer has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. It has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Brooklyn and parts of Queens through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten Island, and Long Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education at all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the seven counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit unionbeerdist.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Did you know that it's Giving Tuesday? Hashtag Giving Tuesday. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and I think the Gates Foundation, Bill Gates, has given everyone an extra dollar, doubling or something. But do it, Giving Tuesday. If you have, you need to get a tax write-off, tax deduction, it's time of year to do it. And you know what's so cool about this show is I looked at the notes today, and I knew that Basil Lee was coming on, president of the New York City Brewers Guild, and I heard Kyle from Big Alice was coming, vice president. But when I saw that Gabe Barry was coming on, my heart went up because, yes, you know, she's someone that I know well. You know, we first met, you used to work for Empire Brewing from upstate. You know, just tell us your backstory, because your story is great. You ran things up there. You were selling beer down here.
So it's funny, when I talk about my time working for Empire, I'm working on it, but I always say a little seven-barrel brew pub. Because that's what Empire was when I managed Empire's brew pub, Seven Barrel Brew Pub. David had worked
in Syracuse, New York, right?
Syracuse, New York. The owner of the brew pub did a lot of work with the New York State Brewers Association at that time, which really positioned me to have a unique perspective of getting to know what was happening in the state of New York from 2008 till 2011. Being really there, doing a lot of work with Paul Leone came on a little bit later down the line, but that was really awesome. And David ended up moving me down, the owner of Empire moved me down to the city to manage their brand after they started contract brewing with Greenpoint Beer Works.
And then I got lucky and you worked at Jimmy's number 43.
I love Empire. I love sales. I understand that beer has to be sold. I do understand that. But man, that was just not for me. And Jimmy, I remember the first time I met you, I was still working for them. And it takes one to know one. And I saw you and I was like, Jimmy Carbone. If something goes south, I'm going to call Jimmy and just see how this goes.
And then we did events. Thank you. And next thing you know, you were working at Brooklyn Brewery.
Yeah, it's true. I remember the kind of starting at Brooklyn. And working with Garrett Oliver and Steve Hindy is an amazing, incredible experience. But I think another thing that maybe is a little bit less known necessarily about Brooklyn is that it's actually run day to day by majority of an incredibly amazing, strong team of women. One of them is sitting next to me, Miss Katie Lynch.
Hi, Katie.
Hey there.
Who has done an amazing job of really building her position at the Brooklyn Brewery. And now I have the fun pleasure of getting to really travel around the world and talk about beer, not only just Brooklyn Brewery beer, but also beer in general. My full title is as Beer Education and Community Ambassador empowers me to create original programming based around educational styles that are needed as a regional specific level, but then also first and foremost serving as a non-sales perspective in the industry. As Basil was saying, as Kyle was saying, as we've all been talking about, we're all in this together, you know? We got
to
support people
what
we're doing here.
People can relate to you.
Yeah.
You're smart.
And then. No, just and that's really, you know, that's, I think that a 29-year-old brand like Brooklyn, we, you know, there's things that are different about our brand than to Finback, than to Big Alice. And one of those things is we have the bandwidth to have a program like mine, and I feel blessed and honored.
Well, you know what's cool is that I remember, you know, whenever the Brewers Guild was just starting and taking over the Beer Week, It was actually Ben and Steve Hindy at Brooklyn Brewery who seemed to be the masterminds, and it seemed to be that they were the one brewery that was big enough to kind of have the glue to keep it going. I remember meeting with them, and it's so great to see that you guys are still involved, because you know you guys do have an international presence, and I just think it's great that you guys, Brooklyn Brewery, is also part of the Brewers Guild. And you're supporting all the other, you know, real small.
And just in case Steve or anybody else over there is listening, you know, on behalf of the Guild, I want to thank Brooklyn Brewery for their support. You know, they give us Gabe and Katie and Ben and a whole host of, you know, their staff that really helps kind of support.
And, and then Katie Quick, so we first met, you were running the tasting room at Brooklyn Brewery?
You know what? So I've had a bunch of different roles at Brooklyn Brewery. I actually like to say that I fell backwards into beer because I didn't see it coming at all. I'm now our field marketing director, but I actually started as an intern and worked my way up. My first job full-time at the brewery was serving as
interns Steve. Get jobs.
Interns get jobs. It is crazy. Every once in a while, interns, it does actually happen. If you work really hard and
get off your ass, get out of the house
and learn to make coffee. That is the secret ingredient.
And didn't you have a thing about babysitting for people's children?
Oh yeah,
too?
You got to do the babysitting.
That's a different show.
Lesson learned. Yikes. Do everything, and they will let you become field marketing director. But my first full-time job was actually being Steve and Garrett's assistant, and I couldn't imagine a better way to start.
Wow. That's awesome.
Well, welcome. And then, okay, we're trying to get into some deeper issues, but, you know, the Guild, what it does for you guys. I mean, it is cool, this fabric of over 30 breweries now, and we know that one of the biggest issues was the state changing the laws so that pretty much all of you guys could open a tasting room in New York. I mean, how big is that for New York City brewing?
Oh, that was, I think, for New York City brewing, for brewing in general, I think that, you know, people think of, There are a lot of small craft breweries, but people think of them sometimes as these, you know, big unknown businesses or these kind of anonymous businesses. But really, many and most of them are run by, you know, regular people, small teams, you know, working their butts off to try to make the best beer they can possibly make. And I think tap rooms are really what kind of has been able to drive and support this. You know, being able to connect with your customers in a super direct way, but also, you know, being able to run a business where you're not on completely razor thin margins, that you can kind of sell at a retail level, really helps. And it's the only way, I think, for us, for sure, it's the only way, you know, we were able to be successful. And I think the older model of just, you know, selling lots of beer over a wide territory is not necessarily the model we strive for.
I mean, may I ask you, like Kyle and Basil, how many barrels of beer do you sell? Like, imagine you're in the old model, where you're just selling wholesale. How many barrels of beer are you producing
without
the tap room? You know.
So I guess just for a little bit of a, you know, explanation on this. So without talking barrel numbers, just talking percentages, it's about 50% of like we're small. Our numbers are going to be skewed, but about 50% of our production is sold in house, but it's 81% of our revenue.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, just give you an idea of how important.
Yes, the tap room. I know, because I know there's numbers. Years ago, someone said you had to do, say, 10,000 barrels just as a production brewery to even break even. I mean, there's crazy numbers. That's a lot of beer.
For sure.
So we haven't brewed 10,000 barrels total yet. You guys dumped that down the drain.
I don't want to talk about it, Kyle. Don't worry about it. Enjoy those days, Kyle.
Yeah, I will.
All right, guys, this is cool. You know, it's nice. It's also, you guys are very politically correct. You don't want to say anything bad about the other brewers.
Well, we all like each other.
Yeah. Jimmy, can I tell you a little bit about the beer that we're drinking right now? Is that cool?
I'm liking it.
You can tell me if you don't want to tell Jimmy.
Well, I was really just hoping to tell Basil, but I mean, so.
I'm listening.
This is actually both. We brought two beers tonight. I don't know if we're going to get to both of them. This is the point where Kyle's going to start telling long stories, so we don't get to the second beer.
If you don't get to the second one, I will take it off your hands.
Anywho,
make sure it goes to the good home.
Let's pop it while we do this. Katie, let's do it.
Both, you are popping it. All right.
Stop.
Sabotage Kyle. So both of these beers, they're both barrel-aged beers and are both now part of a part of our portfolio that we sell called BQEs. But they both started as ghost bottles, which are beers that for a long, long time, really essentially just were existed for us to have fun, to be a little bit more creative, and to make things in a smaller batch way. So the first beer that we had was a beer called Kiwi's Playhouse. This is a tart barrel-aged sour. It actually I think for the average listener, I would like to guess that everybody knows what a pallet is and how big a pallet is. But it took an entire, it took 8 work days to peel an entire pallet of fresh kiwis by hand. Our barrel manager, Eric Brown, used, actually it was a sharpened spoon, much like some kind of shiv, that he would cut the ends off of each of the, each of the kiwis, take the skin off, and then he pureed it on spot. 26
Has anyone
pounds.
Here ever peeled a kiwi before?
We've worked with kiwis. Yeah. I've done a 10-gallon batch of kiwis.
How are your hands even after peeling those kiwis?
I can't imagine what he does. It was. Sounds horrible.
I don't think his hands are ever gonna be the same. Like, I don't mean to be. I'm like not dramatizing. And he comes from the Culinary Institute of America.
Katie's like, I know.
Yeah. It may or may not be a low level acid burn that he'll have for the rest of his life.
So in positive news, what the result was this really. I find this beer to be really dazzling. Oftentimes with fruit, and feel free to weigh in, my brewing friends in the room, fruit, the amount of fruit in your beer, specifically barrel-aged beers, is always an issue of too much, too little, how it's used. And this is an incredible example of the power of wood. This was this beer is blended through, spent some time in actually both white wine barrels as well as red wine barrels, and it's just such an example of the power of cooperage, specifically wine barrels, the microflora, the power of place, the biological terroir of what makes this beer what it is something that I've been really into this year.
You know, one thing I like about it is a lot of the ghost bottles, I used to think that they were bigger or had like a one note like a Lee's, but this is a brilliant beer.
It is a brilliant beer, and this variation of it is sold in stores. But it had a ghost bottle variation that led up to it, much like what's now in people's glasses, which is the famous Brooklyn. Just kidding. That was a Black Ops joke of redacting my. It's Brooklyn Black Ops. When we first started making Brooklyn Black Ops, we had a marketing ploy that this beer did not exist. And I cannot tell you how many times I worked a beer festival and some like king level nerd would come up and be like, "Are you pouring Black Ops?" And I would be like, "No, I don't know what you're talking about." And he would like, I'd let him go for a while. And then finally he'd be like, "Little girl." And I was like, "Okay, all right. The joke's on you, buddy. I know. Yes, we make this beer." So Brooklyn Black Ops is a beautiful imperial stout aged in predominantly Woodford barrels. Both of these beers are actually really great examples of kind of where our barrel aging program is now, and that we're moving more in a place of having enough liquid in barrels that we can start to blend, in larger fashions, like larger batch.
And this is what you guys are doing in Williamsburg facility, or you have other place for blending?
If it existed, that's where you'd be doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So we have a facility actually in the Navy Yard where we store, it's our barrel house essentially, that can hold up to 2,000 barrels. We don't generally keep it chock full, but we generally have about a half to two thirds of that is full. We also have, we call it the library in our warehouse in Williamsburg, where we keep basically a set of everything that is in the barrel facility in the Navy Yard. We keep a set there.
That's the next movie, Ocean 13. The women go in and steal all the barrels, right? I want to give a shout out. Yeah. Gabe, what college did you go to?
Oh, Jimmy, I know you know the answer to this, but I went to Antioch, baby.
I want to say that there's a value of a liberal arts education, and I'm really proud of you. You've been able to do so many jobs and grown so much, but parents out there, Gabe, where'd you go to school again?
I went to Antioch College.
That's right.
Antioch. Thanks, Jimmy.
You got a liberal arts mind here. All right. So we'll get more to say. Now, Kyle, you get in, man. What were you going to say? This is crazy talk. We got Garrett Oliver's ghost bottles, and his team can actually talk about it. That was your thing when you must be someone like Garrett Oliver, who was like so ahead of the curve. You know, I feel like, who did he get to talk to? He had to talk to, like, a writer in England, you know? But I feel like now you guys really have, like, a base of people in New York City that can talk about beer. And I'm meeting guys working at, like, Beer Table who are coming up, and they're beer buyers, and some of them studied science. And the level of knowledge of beer is really great. I don't know if you see that.
You know, bring it back to tonight's topic. You know, that is one of the things that the Guild really focuses on is, you know, kind of the sharing of that knowledge. And we meet monthly, but we also have what we call industry night, where anybody who works for a brewery in New York City is welcome to come, and a different brewery hosts, and kind of it's a networking night, but it's also kind of a sharing of ideas and kind of the friendships that grow out of that kind of lend themselves nicely to collaboration. Not necessarily in beers, that happens pretty often too, but in ideas and resources. And it's not uncommon for one brewery to reach out to another, say who has experience in barrel aging or whatever. I'm not getting as much of the notes I want when I'm dry hopping. What are you doing?
So,
what's something
you want to know at your next industry night? What's something you'd like to know from another brewer?
Oh, I don't know. there's a lot I want to know. I probably don't know more than I do, Jimmy. So it's always great. And Brooklyn's here. Garrett shows up. Steve showed up at a meeting 2 months ago.
Yeah, he did.
That was awesome. I love that. People like that still show up, and often we can feel really small, because we are, in terms of our production compared to, somebody like a Brooklyn Brewery, but we're treated, on an equal plane. When we started, we were making 10 gallon batches. Yeah. I forget about 10 barrel batches, and that was probably the coolest thing for us.
The first time I got one case of it was like your carrot beer. And I actually made a night of it. You came in large bottles, 750s, and I actually decided to pour it by the glass.
Yeah, it's going back to that time, it was great, and people treated us like equals, and were just as willing to share ideas and knowledge with us at that point. They could have laughed us out of the room, and maybe rightfully so, but that's not how this industry works, and certainly not how New York City has worked since we've become a brewery.
All right, and what's this last beer? Is this really Black Ops?
I feel like I want Kyle to talk about
it's certainly Black Ops. It's we're not bringing some crazy secret beer in here. So I'm going to let Gabe actually talk about the beer because I can't be in her presence without letting her speak.
But is this Black Ops?
It is Black Ops. It is Black Ops.
Cheers to that.
Yeah, cheers.
The 10th anniversary.
All right. Bravo. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo.
Like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We've got a room full of beer fans here. Let's go around one more time. Everybody introduce themselves again. And we also have our, come on, Grace, come on in. We've got our buddy.
I was just thinking we got to get Grace in the mix here. Grace, introduce yourself.
Hey guys, my name is Grace Weitz. I'm a writer for Hop Culture. We're an online beer magazine.
You're also an NYU food studies grad student.
Yes, I'm also a graduate student as well. I moonlight as a graduate student. Yeah,
so welcome in. We're going to talk to you more about things tonight.
And hold on one second. Grace also was responsible for the majority of the PR and social media of New York City Beer Week last year. I just want to say that. And over to you, Kyle.
And she did a hell of a job, by the way.
She did do a hell of a job.
Yeah, more applause. More. Yeah. So I guess we're continuing with introductions again. Kyle Hurst, Big Alice Brewing Company.
Hey, I'm still Miss Gabe from the Brooklyn Brewery.
Still Katie Lynch, also Brooklyn Brewery.
Bay's Face from Finback Brewery.
Bay's Face Killer!
So Grace, now we got Grace. Grace White, so you've been sitting through the show. Do you have any questions for these kids?
What beer is next that we're drinking?
All right, good one.
That's a nice segue. Well done, Grace. All right, so in staying with the barrel-aged theme, this isn't a barrel-aged beer, the one I brought. However,
in staying with that theme.
Yeah, however, the beer that we are pouring right now is actually currently in Laphroaig barrels.
Tell us what it is.
All right. So this is called Sleep Now in the Fire. It is a smoked porter. So a couple of roasted malts, smoked malts, oak, beechwood. Checks in at about 7%, just over. And we, so this beer is actually being released tomorrow. So for the untappers out there, doesn't exist until tomorrow. Kind of not unlike,
but maybe
but it will actually exist.
Ethan from our untapped guy might be doing this tomorrow. So.
All right. Well, hopefully we've already built it in, so it's not going in blind. That's always a fun one. But yeah, so so this beer actually we pulled a couple of kegs, so we have it on draft in our tap room starting tomorrow. But the rest of it went into two Laphroaig Scotch barrels that we're able to get, and we'll have that come out in a special bottle release in the next couple of months.
Now, I want to ask you a lot of things, Kyle, but I want to get back to the big idea of the show, you know, the Brewers Guild itself. You know, how do you guys feel now that you have, like, you've got over 30 breweries in New York City? You know, definitely a lot of the good places want to pour all your stuff. What do you think is needed from bars and restaurants now? Do you feel like that they're pouring to your specifications, draft systems, quality controls, you know, education? Do you feel like that the bars and restaurants in New York City are keeping up with what you guys are doing?
I would have to say, I think that I kind of wanted to chime in and elaborate when Kyle mentioned industry nights. I think of all of the things that, yes, New York City Brewers Guild meetings are riveting. But I think a lot of what happens with industry nights and a lot of what happens with the guild, the magic really happens at the industry night. And I think what's needed right now between, let's use the language, retailers and suppliers. If we're going to use that language, I think that we need bar owners, and we need kind of what's happening on a retail side. We need to kind of... we need to figure out, honestly, how we can support them. And I think that goes to a number of different levels. A bar like Jimmy's, a bar like the Blind Tiger, it's going to be drastically different from a place like Spring Lounge, which is still very much a craft-forward beer. And then you shift over to some place like, say, Spite and Dival, and it's, again, another very different kind of craft bar. And I think as breweries start to move forward and think about not only the beers that we make, but the assets that we can produce and the, if you can use the language of, like, auxiliary support, I think these are some of the things that we can start to help bars with education-wise, and then later down the line, we're all building towards a stronger cultural community across the board. Beer is a cultural sense of place, and that doesn't stop at the brewery. That doesn't stop at the tasting room. It has to have the bar owner to be involved in that completion of the equation.
And kind of, you know, just looking at the beers we've had tonight, now, to your point about line cleaning, you know, if you took, you know, Basil's coconut coffee IPA and put it on a line, you know, that just had the Black Ops or the smoked porter on it, you're going to get cross contamination of flavors there if you don't clean those lines in between. So the beer that Basil and Finback created isn't going to be the beer experience in your glass at that bar. You know, it's going to be at their brewery and at bars that take the time to clean their lines. And I don't know if that comes down to, you know, us as, you know, the guild, you know, trying to educate and promote that. As much as it is, you know, some of that lies on the consumer that they need to understand. All right, so all of these beers are very different, but they're all tasting kind of the same. Maybe I need to talk to my bartender and, you know, and express that, you know, this doesn't taste right. I recently had an IPA from a New York City brewery that tasted like it had cinnamon on the rim because it was on a line that had a fall beer, you know, a pumpkin spice beer right before it.
It actually honestly makes me sometimes when I'm out, I want to get a can. Mm. And I had a friend from Germany, because I know in Germany they're really diehard about their quality and the draft and everything. And 20 years ago, he was like, he would only buy bottled beer in bars in New York City.
There are still bars in New York City where I will not buy draft beer. And that's part of the problem. That's part of our challenge. And that's what we, you know, are embracing and looking to, you know, educate and further that cause. And, you know, that's just one component of it, but it's a very important one.
I think that's – I think actually – generally speaking, I think quality is definitely on the up and up. I think education and just awareness in general is a lot better than it used to be. You know, we know people who do draft line cleaning. We've got, you know, companies like Draft Mechanics and all over the place that are really trying to, A, do the work and clean lines, but also kind of spread the message about what it means to have clean lines. I mean, I think a lot of it is... you know, on the consumer, I think kind of, you know, as you would assess anything else in terms of cleanliness at a restaurant or things like that, you know, kind of seeing how the bar kind of cares and focuses on, and how they take care on beer and whether the glasses are clean. I think you can kind of tell in some ways if a place is clean. They may, if they're, you know, focused on
details.
Can I
tell you my secret?
You know, yeah.
I walk in and I can tell by the draft list. If the draft list has, like here at Roberta's, there's Melvin IPA on and there's a special Brooklyn Brewery Roberta's Lager. When I see that they're taking the care to select those beers and have them on draft, which means they're rotating.
Yeah, five lines. Yeah.
They know what they're doing. Yeah. Yeah. Then I can say that probably they're also taking care of their system. But if I walk in and I see a lot of macros and then someone throws on a couple craft brands, then I'm like, uh-oh, I'm probably not going to even want to try those drafts.
There's also been a shift, Jimmy, where, you know, a year ago or more, you know, it was everything was kind of really bold and, you know, hop forward and kind of in your face.
And everyone was really drunk.
Well, yeah, and higher ABV. So now there's a shift to lower ABV beers and more delicate flavors.
Is that because you're getting older, Kyle?
No, I think our palates are all developing.
That what Gabe wanted to ask that.
Yeah, it's the gray.
Jimmy!
But I think that's, you know, part of it is you can't mask a dirty line when you have beers, something like Basil's beer tonight. You know, there's more of that going on. There's a lot of lighter beers and things where there's kind of subtler notes of things, and you're not going to detect any of that on a dirty line.
I would also say one more thing I think that's really important when you look at the equation of what a successful bar is or what how we can support the bar staff. A happy bartender means more money for everybody. A happy bartender means that everyone's going to have a good time. And empowering every bartender to know everything that they need about all of the beers that we're releasing into the market, making sure that we are, you know, being able to make sure that not only quality and education is at the forefront, but empowering people that are serving our beers to be happy with serving them as well. Because they're really a lot of the people that end up choosing what the average consumer is going to drink.
That's great. This is really awesome. Let's just tell one more time the beers. So you guys brought from Brooklyn Brewery what?
We brought Kiwi's Playhouse and then, just kidding, Black Ops.
Black Ops. And Basil, you guys brought?
We brought Cosmic Vibration, which is the coffee coconut IPA, and we also have a couple other ones. We'll probably open.
Let's pop them.
Yeah. Static Breeze is a triple IPA with citrus.
And Kyle, you guys.
That sounds horrible.
Big ass.
I'll have one right now. we brought our newly released as of tomorrow. You guys are all getting a sneak preview of the Sleep Now in the Fire, our smoked porter. And I also brought our winter seasonal, which is our peppermint stout, which is also includes some New York State maple.
I just kept waiting for you to say date night, bro, because I was really hoping for some date night,
date night, bro.
Bro
will be coming out in cans in a couple weeks, so hang tight.
Let's pour the next, but Kyle, now I'm going to ask you. So, you know, I feel like you are the dean in the room. You've been on the shows with us longer than most people here. You started as a 10-gallon brewery, and you guys actually have a tasting room a little bigger now. You know, what's going on for you? You know, you have these great meetings. Your tasting room is rocking. Love your beer.
You know, it's been an awesome journey, I guess, to start. You know, the idea of having a brewery and a tasting room was never in our plans. When we started Big Alice, the idea was that we were brewing once a month together anyway. The laws, you know, were changed thanks to the Craft Beer Act and Governor Cuomo that made it easy to get a license. We're like, all right, let's just make twice as much, sell half of it, and have everybody else pay for our hobby. So we're just going to continue to brew, you know, once a month like we had been, just double. And it takes about the same amount of time to make 10 gallons as it does 5. So, you know, that was the original plan. Since then, you know, we've expanded twice. We bought some brewing equipment from a brew pub in Stamford, Connecticut, a couple years ago, and then just this year we expanded to add, you know, 75 barrels. We have 5 15-barrel fermenters that went in January. So we now have the capacity to brew 85 barrels at any one time, which is how much we brewed our entire first year in existence.
I told you, I remember. I had to fight to get one case of your
carrot. Well, you know, we I think our first year we distributed to 3 bars, yours being one of them. So so we went from that to, you know, we never had enough beer, to now, you know, we're not big in any, you know, capacity. But so now as we're growing, we're finding new challenges and looking at new markets and new ways to bring our beer to more places. And
that's great. Cheers to
the good and the bad of it.
Kyle and Big Al. And then Basil. So it's great to have you now on the board of the New York City Brewers Guild. You guys do so much for the industry. A couple items you have in mind, vision that you have, or
Yeah, I mean, I think I think the guild has been evolving, and I think that we're beginning to, I think in some ways not as a criticism of what the guild was, but I think that we're doing things that are more
all good things must evolve.
Exactly, yeah. Right? And I think we're doing things that are, you know, responding to our needs now, and the industry's changed so much. So I think our goals are really about, you know, how to make it the guild a valuable asset for all the brewers, but also kind of push our mission in terms of our relationship to consumers. You know, we want to make New York City a really great beer town, and I think we're all working together to make that happen. And we're, you know, whether it's education, whether it's sustainability issues with spent grain, or
that's
whether it's legislative issues,
yeah.
Events. You know, I think that right now there's not ever been a better time, I think, for the consumer in terms of craft beer. There's more quality, there's more variety, there's more of everything. You know, you can go into tap rooms. You can go really enjoy and have great beer experiences. And I think with that as a kind of foundation or a background, there's so much more we can do. And I think that that's where the guild is now, which is to say that we finally are at a point where we can kind of exert some or kind of use some of our resources to kind of see where is craft beer going to go in the next, you know, decade or, you know, 5, 10 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
You know, 2 years, exactly.
It's exponential at this point.
But let's just, a couple of things. When is New York City Beer Week? 2018.
So New York City Beer Week kicks off on February 24th. It's Saturday. That's an opening, the opening bash celebration. We are doing things. We're going to have a great fest. We've got about 55 to 60 breweries. It's going to be at the Brooklyn Expo Center. It's going to kick off a whole week of you know, celebrating craft beer in the city. And this year, in some ways, building off of our success last year, it's going to be highlighting as much New York City and New York State breweries as well as out-of-state breweries, and really just bringing craft and the craft community into New York City. And, you know, things that you can't get, things that you might not be able to get all the time, things that you can get from breweries but that might be special beers you don't get all the time. And so really kind of making an event that's going to be, you know, I think trying to be a little different in terms of, like, the programming and curation of the beers, and then also just being a great fun
so
festival.
Now the week's growing, it's going to be a special time.
Yeah, one of the things, Jimmy, just to top on that, so the one of the things the Guild is doing is we're curating an event, you know, that opening bash that Basil's talking about. We kick the day off with a family-friendly fermentation festival. So it starts.
Can you say that phrase again, please?
Family-friendly fermentation festival. You give me more black ops, I won't be able to say it. But so it's a place where you can come in and you know, bring
we're
everybody.
Drinking black ops out of the bottle.
All things fermentation. I think every time I got a break from our table last year, I came back with something, you know, sauerkraut, pickles, whatever, anything fermented. It was all about it, and it was awesome.
No, I like the direction. I like that you guys are talking about bringing in breweries from out of state as well. That seems to be like you guys have started as the Brewers Guild, incubated the New York City breweries, and now, wow, you guys are owning, you know, New York City Beer
and
Week.
I think great. I think that the Guild as a whole, I know Grace wants to say something here, but I know that as the Guild as a whole this year, as Basil and Kyle and Jimmy, we've all said a lot of times over, the Guild's kind of in a bit of a cocoon phase, if you will. I mentioned at the beginning of this that I serve as the marketing and communications chair for the Guild. And a lot of what that has been this year is a lot of waiting. And a lot of what that has been is a lot of looking at what has events done over the past couple years? What do the retailers want? Where are we all at as an industry? And helping to use this year as a bit of a barometer check and helping to kind of focus and move with grace and with ideas and goals as opposed to just jumping and zigging and zagging and really thinking about who are we? What are we doing here? And letting our events lead us, and then maybe later down the line, we can have a little bit more of a focus.
And Gabe, guess when New York City Brewers' Choice is next year?
When is it, Jimmy?
Wednesday, February 28th. Woo! Hope that's okay with you guys. So.
I'm good with that.
Same thing, but it's you guys. And Grace White's our special guest, NYU Food Studies grad, Hop Culture Magazine.
Yeah, I think the Guild has a great mission. A lot of people come to New York and they come to see things that tourists would like to do. They go to the Empire State Building, they go to the Statue of Liberty, they just stay in Manhattan, and they don't realize that there's this robust and energetic and dynamic brewing culture existing all across New York. And that's really, to me, when I was working with the Guild last year, that really became the purpose, you know, to kind of uncover the brewing scene, not only for people that live here in New York, but also people that are coming and visiting, because they'll come and become one of those, you know, millions of tourists and just never even realize that there's this great, great culture of beer here. And that's what I see the Guild is really uncovering for people.
Great. Let's all make a toast. And how about, top me off on this latest Finback beer.
Yeah, that's just freaking on point, Baze.
I didn't
Baze.
Get any.
Yeah, likely story.
So we can't even sum it up this show.
I was working on that Black Ops.
New York City Brewers Guild, Beer Week, New York City Brewers Choice. And Grace also will be back in the future talking about a special Women's Brewers Festival for what, August 2018?
Yeah, it's going to be in August 2018 from August 6th to August 12th. We're putting on Hop Culture, we're putting on a Woman in Craft Beer Week. It's called Beers Without Beards. There's a famous
Although
quote
I know
from
some
Plato.
Women with beards.
You, well, okay.
Well,
so it's
I,
beer
I
without
don't
there's
have
the
beard.
Out there's the out in quotes. Yeah. So it's inclusive of all people with beards or non-beards that like to drink beer. But there's a famous quote from Plato. He says that he was a wise man who invented beer, and not many of us get to say this often, but Plato was actually wrong. It was women who actually were the first Woo! Original brewers.
That's right, Grace.
Yes,
that's right.
As far back as 6000 BC. But beyond just celebrating women in who make beer, as these ladies to my left will attest, there are women who are selling beer, writing about beer, in the front offices, doing podcasts, you know, all kinds of things. And that's really the space that we're creating for all these women that are involved in beer, somewhere where they can cultivate, congregate, and just talk and enjoy beer.
And that's awesome. And also, your buddies at Hop Culture, there's a festival coming up on December 3rd in New York City, Juicy Brew
Juicy
NYC. So hopculture.com. Check it out. They're the new players on the scene. I said, it's actually refreshing for me. I feel like that my big note is that I feel like beer media was getting weak. You know, it feels like there was a little less of interest. People were just talking about big, you know, macros taking over whatever craft. It's so great that Hop Culture's around. I'm glad that you're here, Grace, and thank you so much for reaching out. Big shout out. Everybody go around one more time.
Kyle Hurst, Big Alice Brewing Company.
Grace White's Hop Culture.
Garrett Alton. No, I'm just kidding. Gabe Barry, Brooklyn Brewery.
Gabe Barry, no, just kidding. Katie Lynch, Brooklyn Brewery.
Basil. Finback Brewery.
Basically, thanks for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, engineer, David Tatasciore. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo, woo, woo. Come on, people.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.